everybody, all these guys like in the industry or whatever, like they're all so perfect. And it's like, man, we're just like everybody else. If I sit there and go, yeah, here's what I use, you should use it, I think you're setting people up maybe for failure. They're going to have a poor experience and they maybe even could put themselves in a dangerous situation. I just felt that I can help people not only understand the knowledge and break it down into the basics and how I can apply it, but then also craft a program to go, okay, here's what you need to go do now to go and gain some experience. That's the cool thing about hunting, is like we get to see things because we're observing wildlife that most people in this world never even know go on. This is John Barklow, and you're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
I've been blessed to harvest 22 of the 29 North American animals with my bow.
My personal 24-hour record for death threats is 88.
They will start putting two and two together and realize this is how you call bulls in.
So when I go hunting now, that's the ethos I take with me. You know, whatever this hunter's going to throw at you, you pull your big girl pants up and you get on with it.
Giant bucks are freaking awesome. They're beautiful. But you know what? I would not trade this first buck for anything in the world.
So I'm a geek. Magicians and dragons and magic swords. I shit you not, man. I'm the biggest dork in the gun business.
I'm Freddie Hartice, Hollywood Hunter.
This is Aaron Snyder.
Hey, this is Trevin Stoltzfus with Outback Outdoors.
This is Rihanna Carey.
Hi, this is John Sloan of the Interviews with the Hunting Masters.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective. All right, y'all, getting on with today's episode. I am here with Mr. John Barklow. John, thanks so much for hopping on. We were going to hop on the line together, and then you said, hey, I think I'm about 15 minutes up the road from you.
This has been a cool morning, Sam. Let me tell you how it played out. So I got on a couple days ago just to make sure that, you know, we could connect virtually. And this morning I was sitting down, I was doing some work at my desk, and I saw that, you know, my friend Jack Carr had just been on your podcast. Probably, I don't even know if it's been released yet. And I'd been on your IG page and I was following, but I don't know, something made me, because of Jack, something made me go there and click on your page. And I saw it was Belgrade, Montana. Well, that happens to be where I live. And then we connected on this Zoom call, and which wasn't going to work because the weather and the internet.
Yeah, I think we got, what, about 5 minutes in.
And I said, hey, man, I literally think we live 10 minutes apart. And here we are sitting in my barn doing a podcast.
I like that it's not even like Belgrade and Bozeman or like Three Forks or somebody. It's like, no, we're both in Belgrade.
Oh yeah, no, just, it was, yeah.
I mean, opposite sides of town, but still.
Yeah, but still. No, that was pretty wild.
No, I love it. And I'm always happier when I get to do one in person. And I'm still a little bit in California mindset that I'm like, I feel like I'm further away from everyone than I am. And I need to remind myself that I can reach out to people and actually like meet up with them now.
Yeah.
I mean, I have access to, the center of the outdoors here, you know?
I'd say if you're not in Bozeman or Salt Lake, like that those are the two epicenters, it seems like, of the hunting industry right now. If you're around those two places, and yeah, you're going to be able to tap into a lot of people face to face. Yeah.
I know a lot of people are probably rolling their eyes at that statement too, and they can just get the heck over it. There's so much crap talking that goes on. Like the second you talk about the industry or whatever it is, like, your Lord, people just need to calm down. And I'm like, okay, if you don't like the hunting industry, then go build your own bow. Go.
Yeah. Well, we were talking before we jumped on the air, but I mean, the hunting industry, yeah, we say that, but really, when you kind of peel back even the very first superficial layer, we are just a bunch of normal people that all have the same passion that, you know, some of us were able to parlay that into a career, and you know, others are just super active participants, but we're all the same people. So, you know, I think people blow it out of proportion. I try not to get all wrapped around the axle any of that. Like, I'm just a normal guy who, you know, does a job, and it just happens to be, you know, a job that directly ties to what I love to do. So
yeah. Well, and I've had so many conversations on this topic with different people from different perspectives of like, because, you know, I'm sure you probably get this too, where people find out what you do and they're like, oh man, like, I want to work in the hunting industry. And like, how do I do that? And, you know, well, and then Cody and I have talked about this tons of times. It's like, well, do you want to work in the hunting industry or do you want to hunt?
Yeah.
Because they're a lot of the time, you know, unless you're really lucky, they can be mutually exclusive.
They can be. I mean, I have to structure my year so that I get my time off in September to hunt as much as I want to, right? And there are perks. There are definitely perks. You know, I do get to go on, you know, 1, 2, 3 hunts a year that, you know, the business pays for. But as much as that sounds cool, and it can be, it's work. Like, I'm there to do a job, mm-hmm. and not to perform necessarily, like, you know, dance, but, you know, to promote the business or to promote a product or whatever. And so even though it's enjoyable, it is still work. And, you know, there's an old saying, does a mailman go for a walk on his day off? And, you know, really what that means is you don't want to take a passion and turn it into a job and kill the passion. Mm-hmm. And I went into this specifically with that consciously in mind, and I was not going to let it ruin my you know, my love for hunting. And so there is a balance, you know. The nice thing is when I get off work, so to speak, let's say I was selling brooms. when I got done selling brooms at the end of the day after 8 hours, I'm not going to go home and keep thinking about brooms. But because I do what I do, like work and you know, my personal life, like, it all kind of blends because it's all I think about. Like, hunting is all I think about, or the gear we use is all I think about. So that's kind of a cool aspect. But I had a buddy come down a couple years in a row from Alaska to hunt. And he hadn't seen me in a while. And, you know, we're out antelope hunting. And I think 1 year we went elk hunting, and we're out here shooting the bows and everything. And, you know, my phone's blowing up and I'm doing texts, I'm on calls. And he, I mean, not like, he didn't say it in like a bad way, but he goes, you don't really get any time off, do you? And I'm like, not really, but it's okay because I like what I do. Yeah. But, you know, I have seen people kind of get run into the ground with that as well. So,
I mean, I've come to realize, like, even loving what I do have to disconnect it sometimes because, like you said, you have to be very cognizant that you're not burning out your passion because, you know, there's times like I'll go fishing and in the back of my head, I'm kind of like, I got to make sure I'm generating content. Gosh, it's like, it feels dirty saying that.
Yeah.
But to some extent, like, I just want to make sure I've got some pictures that I can share with people to get to the ultimate goal of whether it's driving them to the podcast so they can learn or whatever it is.
Right.
And, but those times where I do, I'm like, I'm just going to fish today. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to worry about, like, okay, is the lighting good enough for me to get a good photo of the release on this track? Screw that. Like, I'm just going to fish today. And you definitely have to say sometimes, I'm just going to hunt today. I'm just going to fish today. I can't even think of the last time I just went camping.
Right, right. Well, it feels liberating when you do that because all of a sudden, you know, you don't want to lose sight of, you know, the beautiful sunrise, or you don't want to lose sight of the smile on your face when that bull bugles and comes charging in, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be worried about, oh, is the lighting right? Is the cameraman where he needs to be? Or can I shoot? Because, you know, it can detract. And again, I've tried to be very aware of that and try not to let it ruin what I do. Like, I, mm-hmm. you know, I still do wake up. I mean, this sounds kind of corny, but I still do wake up sometimes and pinch myself that, you know, some of the things I wanted to do as a kid, like, I'm being able to live out right now. And I think as long as I can kind of keep that perspective, then, you know, the days where I'm grinding over a spreadsheet that nobody gets to see or nobody talks about, you know, are able to get balanced out by all the cool days that, you know, you get to run around the mountains.
Yeah, I think it's, I hate these words are coming out of my mouth because they're such a cliche, but it's all about finding that balance. Like, it's, you find what you love, just be cognizant of what you're doing it, your reasons for doing it. And I think as long as, again, you're always aware of your reasons for doing what you're doing, you're not going to burn yourself out, because you're always going to be authentic with it. And if you're out hunting because you love hunting, you're not going to start hating it until you lose sight of why you're doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and I've never been a good person with balance. Like, I'm either all in or all out.
Oh, but, you're talking to the worst.
But you know, my job is not such that I'm necessarily worried about. Like, I don't go out and worry about capturing content necessarily. I think I've been around a lot of people that, you know, that's what they do. And I think that would worry me that I would burn out on that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not there yet. So, you know, let's hope I don't get there. But I could definitely see that. And I think that would happen in any industry.
Oh, yeah, with anything. But
yeah.
So how did you get into all this? How did you get your start when it comes to just hunting and the outdoors in general? Like, how'd you get introduced to it?
Yeah, so maybe to go all the way back, but you know, I came from, you know, I grew up in Ohio. Nobody in my family, well, my dad did a little bird hunting, but for the most part, nobody big game hunted at all. And I for whatever reason, I was drawn to archery, like, immediately. So self-taught archery hunter in Ohio, trying to hunt whitetail deer very unsuccessfully. but always had a passion for it. Went in, enlisted in the military, and spent, you know, the next 26 years of my life in the military. Really kind of diverse career, you know, was a diver in the Navy for all of my career, but got involved teaching diving to the SEAL teams and all kinds of really unique, cool things there, and met some people along the way, thought maybe I'd get out of the Navy. I joked that I was trying to get out of the Navy from the day I got in, but, you know, maybe thought I'd become a mountain guide, like a ski mountaineering guide or something like that. So, transferred from Virginia out to California, started pursuing that on my off times, really got a lot of experience, met a lot of great mentors, started bringing some of that knowledge back to the SEAL community and able to, you know, to teach just nothing set in stone, just kind of like a la carte if they needed some stuff. And then 9/11 happened. And when 9/11 happened, I was one of, you know, a select few people handpicked to go basically get everybody ready to go to Afghanistan. And we developed clothing, we developed gear, we were able to work with the best outdoor brands in the industry to develop the things we needed in a very short amount of time. And so I was incredibly lucky that I had, you know, I came from nothing, so to speak, experience-wise. I started working, made all the mistakes, met a few people, and then, you know, fell into the honeypot, and then was able to start tapping into some of the best talent, whatever that was. It be it land navigation, survival, climbing, skiing, you know, shooting, whatever it needed to be. Like, I was able to access teachers to help me. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to then become a more proficient instructor and teach other people. So I did that for, you know, 15 years. And that was a great experience, because not only was it just me or me and my friends, but now I got to see, you know, how the words came out of my mouth or the techniques I described and how people digested those and executed on them. And then I could modify that and come back. So kind of jump to the present. I decided I was ready to retire. I wanted to work in the hunting industry because I wanted to do something that I was passionate about. And I'd been passionate in the military, and I just couldn't imagine a life that I didn't like what I did for a living. Very fortunate through quite a few, you know, interesting coincidences. One of which was, you know, Jack Carr, my friend, knew Jonathan. They were the founder of Sitka. They were friends from high school. Anyways, I got to go and interview with Sitka, and they hired me as their big game product manager. And so I've been doing that for 6 years, and I've been able to leverage all the experience that I had in the military, not just teaching and being an end user, but also in the development of clothing and equipment and how to use it and how to leverage it and how to explain that to people. And so I've been doing that for 6 years now, you know, which takes us up to present time. So a really long path,
yeah,
fairly diverse, but still moving in the same general direction that I kind of always wanted my life to move.
You know, this is one of my favorite questions to ask. Anybody that's listening to the podcast knows I pretty much always start with that question because, you know, a lot of the time you get the whole, you know, yeah, I used to walk through the woods with my granddad's rifle and, you know, my dad took me out since I was 4 years old and shot my first deer before I was supposed to and, you know, all that whole story. Yeah. But I love hearing about all the unique ways people get drawn into hunting and the outdoors and fishing because it's every story is so unique. You know, it's like I just kind of came into it through shooting and this and that. And I wanted to do something with it. And then I didn't even hunt with a rifle for the first 3 years. And, I think it gives people that are listening a little bit of inspiration to that are sitting there thinking like, okay, I don't have a chance at this. I'm too far behind because I didn't get into it in this way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good for people to hear that because, you know, there may be some guy out there, you know, sitting on a base somewhere listening to this going like, shoot, I should start taking these skills I'm learning and learn to leverage them into being in the outdoors and hunting and this and that or the other. And, so it's really cool to hear those stories and all of that. But so, you know, anyone that follows your page, I think on Instagram, you definitely have a very specific focus on your page, though.
I do, yeah.
And you definitely have a passion for kind of survival teaching and very instructional. You know, a lot of the people you can tell it's more of a lifestyle thing where it's like, it's kind of inspirational, versus like you sit down and you have these videos and you break down a lot of stuff on your page.
Yeah.
So, I mean, does that just kind of come from all of that teaching you did then in the military, all of that instruction, it kind of just transitions into what, kind of what you're doing on Instagram now?
Yeah. You know, there's a couple layers there. So, you know, I only really started doing anything on Instagram maybe 8 or 9 months ago, say 9 months ago, for a bunch of different reasons. But, you know, one of which was working from home because of the virus. I could be a little more efficient with my time. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would just say as a general statement is I realized I was selfish. I had acquired, through, you know, the journey I just described, 30 years of experience. And I think the experience is somewhat unique because it was kind of coming from nothing and being self-taught to making every mistake that you could possibly make, to being lucky enough to find mentors and be open to their teaching, to then being able to leverage that into being an instructor. And like I said, that's where you really, what I found is that's where you really learn a subject is when you are the person standing in front, conveying information and getting feedback from people. Because not only is it how do they take and digest a message, but what are they asking you back in return? Or when you're out in the field, you know, in all kinds of inclement weather, you know, the quote real world, that's when things happen. And so if you only know one way, then that way is quickly going to, you know, have a bunch of holes poked in it, or you're going to have people that learn differently and you're going to have to be able to convey either the same idea in different ways or different ideas or different techniques or different methods so that they can choose that for the application. Right. So there's all that. And I realized that knowledge in my head was selfishly kept to myself. And the reason I did it is because, you know, I don't have nothing against social media, but I'm like, man, there's a bunch of other people out there doing that. And I just realized that maybe I have something to say as well. And maybe I can help somebody, that person that I used to be, maybe that I can get across to somebody. Mm-hmm. And what I say is I hope that I can lessen the steepness of the learning curve. You still have to go through the journey. You still have to walk the miles. You know, Aaron Snyder, I think, said it best, and I don't know if he came up with this or he got this from somebody else, but I think it succinctly says, it's easy to get knowledge nowadays, but it's hard to get wisdom. And so I can go to a YouTube page, I can find the information, but that doesn't make me a subject matter expert. So I just felt that I can help people not only understand the knowledge and break it down into the basic why it works and how it works and how I can apply it, but then also, you know, hopefully as I go forward, craft a program to go, okay, here's what you need to go do now to go and gain some experience. I shy away from, and hopefully I'm not going too deep here, but I shy away from specifically trying to promote a product or to promote, you know, the brand I work for. Not that I don't believe in the brand I work for, believe that the stuff I make is the best, but you know, there can be a lot of, I try to keep bias out of it, but there can be a lot of opinion, right? And quite frankly, I think it's wasted time and effort. If I'm trying to consume information and I have somebody with 30 years of experience saying, hey, here's exactly what you need, because that's what I use, I think that's, I don't want to say disingenuous, maybe it is, but it's also maybe irresponsible. So if I go out in the mountains today, and it's just so people know, it's like maybe mid-20s, I think it's blowing 35 on the ridge tops, it snowed a foot last night in the mountains, and it's kind of cold, right? If I go out there, the kit I'm going to take, I would not recommend somebody who's been doing this 1, 2, 3, or 5 years, right? So if I sit there and go, yeah, here's what I use, you should use it, I think that that could be somewhat, I think you're setting people up maybe for failure, and I think that they're going to have a poor experience, and they maybe even could put themselves in a dangerous situation. So what I try to do is convey information that people can take and learn from and continue to apply in a safe manner, and then it's up to them to gain the experience, right? So that's a long way of saying I started an IG page 9 months ago, and when you go there, it's not about me. It's not about trophy photos. It's not about, you know, a promotion of a specific product. I'm truly, it's an educational platform.
Yeah.
So, you know, I hope people don't get bored. I do tend to be long-winded, as you can tell right now. But the reality is every single video I've done, and I think right now there's 40 on there. Every single video is, you know, can be no longer than, or I let them be no longer than 15 minutes. But the reality is I am merely scratching the surface of every one of those subjects. Mm-hmm. But that's all that's required right now for people to take some information, digest it, and then start to apply it. And then we'll come back for the second pass, and maybe we'll dig in a little deeper, and maybe we'll dig in a little deeper. The thing is, I'm not making this up. Like, I've written curriculum. I've taught courses. You know, I've got outlines. Like, this is a very, if people see it or not, like, it can change from week to week, but it's a fairly, you know, tried and true, structured set of building blocks to get people to where they need to go. And I mm-hmm. think it could be anybody from, you know, day one, I don't know what I'm doing, to a year or two into it, hey, I just bought a gun or a bow, or because of the virus, I wanted to start hunting, to maybe people that have been doing this 10 years. I've been doing this 30, and I'll tell you, I am not arrogant enough to think that I can't learn from anybody. I still make mistakes, and I learn all the time from those mistakes. But I mean, I've learned from people that, you know, literally have never seen snow. And I go out there and we start doing something. And because of that perspective of them, they ask a question or have a statement that all of a sudden sparked something in my head and said, I've never thought of it that way before. And I just learned something. So anyways, you know, I like to say there's no off season and that, you know, you never stop learning. I mean, that's kind of the way I've approached it. So that's kind of the way I approach my IG page.
Well, I remember when I love your approach, because one of the first things that frustrated me, I remember I was building my kit very first hunt, you know, and I'm the researcher. I'm the, like you said, I'm the guy that has the knowledge, just not the wisdom. And I would dig into every course, every article, everything. I'd look at, you know, 10 or 12 different guys' gear setups, and I'd kind of analyze what they have and what was, you know, they had in common and what the differences were, and I'd look at that. And I went on to the Rockslide forums, and I started putting up my gear list. I'm like, hey, this is what I have, and 90% of the people there are super helpful. And then there was that, like, 5 to 10% that were just like, why would you use that? That's stupid. No, you need to do that. Like, use this product. And I'm like, why? And then they would get really butthurt that I didn't just immediately go, okay, I'm doing that. They're like, fine. Well, then you're going to fail or whatever, you know. And I'm like, I just want to understand why what I chose is wrong in your eyes, so I can apply that to my situation, because it's not always the same across the board. Or if I change the hunt that I'm going on, I want to know exactly how to apply that then to my next hunt. And I had some people reach out, and they're like, just ignore them. They're like, this is exactly why. I'm like, yeah, thank you. That makes absolute sense.
Well, first of all, the one, it's not just with social media, but it's faceless, so to speak, on social media. So it's a little more prevalent, but you don't know who that person is or what their experience is. And I will tell you that most people that either can't tell you why or cannot give you multiple alternatives don't have the depth of experience to actually be commenting. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm not saying they don't think they're doing something kind or helpful. You know, helpful, but they don't have the depth of experience. And so, you know, it's just like, I have people ask me, you know, what does it take for me to be a field tester? I said, well, the first thing is I have to respect your opinion, right? Because if I don't respect you or your opinion, then we don't even have anything to build a relationship on. And then the second is, right, experience. But, you know, that's what I see is, well, you have to do it this way. Well, I'm here to tell you, having done it for so long and working for a brand, that there are multiple ways to do it. There are multiple pieces of kit. I mean, there are probably a few things where it's like, listen, this is clearly the best of, you know, whatever, let's just say a stove. But that doesn't mean that the other stoves can't work for you. Okay, the other thing you have to roll into the equation is, how are you applying that? Where are you applying that? What is your hunting style compared to mine? So if you're in Arizona and I'm in Montana and you hunt coos deer in August and I hunt, you know, elk in October, late rifle in November, like, your kit and my kit are going to be completely different. And they
jet
should,
stream jacket and probably they, may not it, be the best
exactly,
option.
Exactly. and they should be. And so, but people don't see it that way. They just try to make this blanket kind of statement. And that's not, you know, it's just not the way it should be. And there's a difference between fact and opinion. And most of us, what we say is opinion-based. I think this is the best because of this. Okay, great. Your experience level, your physical fitness level, your knowledge level, whatever it is, has to be factored in. And that's why blanket statements are kind of, I don't want to say dangerous, but they're just ignorant, right? And that's what I'm trying to, I'm not saying break the mold, but that's what I'm trying not to do, right? If people ask me specific questions, I will answer them. I won't shy away from it. But I also find it's more important to understand, you know, as opposed, like I just did something on water purification and filtration. It's more important to understand how a method purifies water, why it works, and what the pros and cons are, than specifically telling you about one specific product in the market that does that, right? Now, I could give you an example of one, but I even shy away from that because people will immediately be attracted to that. And I'd rather you hear the message of this is the knowledge. And then if they ask questions, I'm like, yeah, you have these options. They're all good options. Hey, what do you think about that? That's a good option too.
Yeah.
As opposed to just trying to, you know, say, if you don't do it my way, you're dumb. That's not the case.
Well, it goes back to a lot of what we talked about. Again, the difference between knowledge and wisdom as well, because you'll be put in situations where something that you learn doesn't apply, and the same happens with products. You know, say, just a specific example is water filters. Say you're on a hunt, you break your water filter. We're here in Montana, you know, depending on the kind of water filter you get, these things can, if you don't clear them out, they'll freeze over and crack.
Yep.
You go run into town. It's a small town. You know, who knows where you're running into. And it's you. They got the gas station sportsman's store. Yep. And you got to find a water filter or else you're kind of screwed on your hunt.
Yep.
Or whatever it happens to be. You need to know why that water filter worked for you and why you selected that one, not necessarily why just that it's that one. Because if they don't have that Sawyer Mini or that MSR or whatever, you're going to be screwed and you're going to not have confidence in your equipment, in your gear at that point. And, you know, that's the start of a downhill hunt right there. The second you start losing confidence in, being able to be out in the wilderness. So,
and believe me, I understand that people want, you know, we'll call it the easy button. Like, listen, just tell me where to start or tell me what I need. I think that's okay, but I think there has to be a deeper dive into the why. Because truly, if you want to be good at this and you want to do this and you want to have fun and you want to have, you know, freedom to roam around the mountains. And I like to say, you know, I don't want to get pushed out of the mountains. I want to leave on my terms, not Mother Nature's.
Mm-hmm.
That you do have to dive in and begin to understand this. There, you know, I can help, or, you know, different platforms can help steepen or lessen the steepness of the learning curve. But there still is a learning curve, and there is no easy button. Like, you know, I've been successful, you know, hunting some elk, but I'm not as good as Corey Jacobson calling or Jason Phelps calling or, you know, Dirk Durham calling. And, mm-hmm. you know, I practice and I shoot my bow a lot, but, you know, I'm not as good as a Levi Morgan or a John Dudley, or I don't stalk as good as Aaron Snyder. I mean, there's still things for me to learn as well, right? But there's things for them to learn as well as, you know, too. And so I think there's really good platforms to go to kind of get some of that knowledge. But, you know, everybody just wants to, you know, pack their ruck and go. And, you know, I've unfortunately, you know, seen it and heard it and talked to people too many times where they're, you know, coming from Pennsylvania, coming from Ohio, you know, coming from South Carolina, whatever, and they're coming out west. We were talking about the romanticism of hunting the West, and, mm-hmm. and it is, and it's super cool, and it's all I ever dreamed about. But the reality is, the harsh reality is, it's going to kick you in the ass.
Yeah.
And there is a very steep learning curve. No matter how much information you pack between your ears, you still got to come out here and do it, right? But that's the fun part too. Like, come out and gain that experience and do it. And so, you know, I tag my posts with knowledge from storms. And what I mean by that is, that's the way I've kind of looked at, you know, at my journey up into this point, which is I spent a lot of shitty nights out. I've been wet. I've been miserable. I've left hunts early. I've driven home from hunts early with my tail between my legs. I've failed. You know, I've missed. I've wounded. I've done it all. Like, I don't necessarily shy away from that. And I'm not perfect now. But what I try to do is learn from every one of those mistakes. And I write them down. And then I try to circle back. And I've made several of them multiple times. That's just life. I just try to limit the number of those that I do, the more, you know, miles I put under my belt going forward. But people, you know, nobody talks about that, or everybody thinks like, man, everybody, all these guys like in the industry or whatever, like they're all so perfect. And it's like, man, we're just like everybody else. Like, at the end of the day, Mother Nature and the animal get a vote. So, you know, if you can make yourself as indestructible as possible, the most durable human you can, and pack all the knowledge you can get between your ears and start gaining some experience, which again is the fun part, like, dude, then just sit back and enjoy the next 30 years of your life of this journey we call the outdoors or the backcountry or, you know, insert moniker here, but like, that's what it is. Like, you're not probably going to shoot a 360 bull your first year or 10 out in the mountains.
Four years.
I mean, you're just
definitely feel that.
but it'll happen. Yeah. Like, there's a good chance if you just keep putting in the time, it'll happen. So anyways, I'm kind of like going down rabbit holes now, but
no, that's a rabbit holes are the, where all the good stuff is, man.
Yeah.
No, I feel that, like, and anyone, you know, you're not as familiar with my story, but the folks that have been listening for a while, they know my whole history with elk hunting, and you know, I kind of mentioned it, like, I fell in love with that romanticism, and my first hunt, I was like, I'm going to Idaho, I'm going solo, and I'm doing it DIY with my bow, and that was definitely
enlightening
knowledge from storms was, you know, and I mean, I knew the likelihood was probably zero, you know, what is it like 11% or 12% success rate for archery elk, or is it even that much anymore? Like,
I think it's less than 10.
Yeah. Or maybe it's, I think that might be a rifle or something is that 12%, but,
yeah, so, I think archery's like between 5 and 8%, something like it's minuscule, but.
So I knew, like, I mean, I knew that the percentage was even a lot less for me going out for my effectively first ever real hunt and doing this. And I mean, I did it anyway, and it was miserable, and I got punched in the face multiple times real hard, and I came out of there with my tail between my legs, and
but I
bet shared that whole story.
Too.
Oh, my gosh. I learned a ton, and every year since, you know, I went into it, and Cody and I kind of talked about that on our podcast, where, like, what finally clicked and the stuff, you know, because I finally got my first elk this year.
Awesome.
And it was amazing, but it took me 4 years, and every year I look at it, and it is like a super clear progression of growth from year to year. If you kind of listen to the episodes, I do a recap after each one, and I talk just about what I learned.
Perfect,
and
man. That is awesome that you can go through that process and people can learn from your mistakes. Mm-hmm. Not only you, but you can provide that value to other people. You've beat the trend. I mean, if you shot an elk in your first on year four, I think the average is 1 every 10. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody who's starting out, you know, it's like 10. And I don't mean that to like crush people's soul. I don't mean that. I don't mean to do that at all. I'm just saying it's not as easy as everyone, you know, kind of portrays it to be.
Yeah.
And so because of that, like, man, like that's why, you know, training and you know, shooting your bow and looking at gear and tweaking your kit and learning from other people and listening to podcasts is like, I do it. Like, you know, I'm supposed to be maybe, you know, one of the people in the industry, you know, follow me. And I'm like, yeah, but you also got to understand I'm human. And like, I still get my ass kicked all the time. Matter of fact, when the weather's good and the animal's plentiful and say I kill on day 1, 2, or 3, like I probably don't learn very much on those trips. It's the ones where you go out and get schooled and you think you're good. And then animals or the mountains have a way of just like knocking you back down and saying, hey, little man, like you're not as good as you think you are. We still rule, you know.
It's almost like when you have one of those good years, you're like, oh crap, it's coming now. it's the scales are a little bit tilted.
I'll tell you, I had a year. Let's see, it was that's so funny you say that because I think it was 2016 or 20. It was the second year I was out here. So I think 2017. It was 2017. So I'd been out here. I'd had some success, a little bit of success already, you know. And I'd been archery hunting for 30 years. That wasn't the issue. But like elk, mule deer, antelope, you know. And that year I was just like, I had to work for it, but it was almost like I could do no wrong. Like, I mean, I was getting opportunities. I was getting stalks. I was, you know, everything I shot died within sight. Like, it was just one of those years. And I came out of that year and I was so fired up. And then I was like, I'm going to get pummeled for the next couple of years. I just know it's coming.
This one was so good. And it's not even 1 year.
2 years, man, my friends were, you know, I was still killing stuff, but my friends were joking. They're like, dude, you have like a black cloud over your head. I mean, let's put it this way. I've invested, I've invested 21 days in the last couple of years moose hunting. once in northern British Columbia and once in central British Columbia on work trips, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The first 12-day trip, I never even saw a moose. The second trip, I never saw, I think I saw a bull that had, you know, antlers as big as his ears. I know people that have gone out first year, you know, and shot a really nice bull. But, you know, it was like, I just wasn't even getting stalks. Like, I wasn't even getting shot opportunities. Like, it just wasn't happening, you know? And so, you know, you have an opportunity. It's like, do I, you know, not that I was going to quit, but it's like, do I give up or, you know, do I double down and just keep staying the course? And, you know, if this is archery hunting or this is hunting in general, like it'll come around, you know, and so this year, this past season, like at a good year, like a solid year, like not, you know, not, hopefully not like 2017 again, where I get smacked next year. But you know, that's what I tell people. It's like, you know, I hear all the time, it's like, I'm going to go to Colorado and shoot a bull. It's like, awesome. How many elk have you shot? None. How many animals you killed with your bow? You know, a dozen or six, or doesn't matter. It's like, okay, well, what are your standards? Well, it's 320 bull or nothing, or it's a six by or nothing. I'm like, man, to each his own. But what I recommend is kill the first legal animal that you have a great shot opportunity on. Enjoy the experience, enjoy the process, and get reps under your belt, so that when you get out there on your fourth or fifth year and you get that beautiful 320 bull come out, bugle in your face with steam coming out of his nose one morning on the edge of a beautiful meadow, you've been there before and you can execute, and you've kind of earned it, so to speak, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think people set themselves up for failure. And, you know, and I kind of did. I did for a long time with whitetail, right? And I still am not that good a whitetail hunter, but... for as much as I've whitetail hunted, but
I can't sit still long enough for that.
You know,
garbage.
But it's like, man, if I held out to shoot a 170 class whitetail, I would have never shot a whitetail up until this point in my life, right? Like, I've never shot that. I've seen one in my life on the hoof. So, you know, again, so everybody has to kind of figure it out. But, you know, if you live in whitetail country, then set that standard. If you live in elk country, set that standard. But when I travel back east or Midwest to hunt whitetail, like, I got to be a little realistic about that, you know? But the other thing I see is, again, not I'm not harping on the folks back east. I mean, I'm from there. They're my kin. But you know, I talked to a guy the other day, and I hadn't really gotten the debrief on his elk hunt. And I'll just say he came from back east, and let's just say sea level, and he drove to Colorado or flew to Colorado. Rented a truck.
I just know where this
is going. Drove to the trailhead and got out of the truck to start hiking at 10,500 feet from sea level. Okay, so I could already tell you, like, you've already exceeded any amount of elevation gain you should have in one day period, let alone get out and start to do a physical activity. Well, even though his will was there, he was just physically crushed and beaten down.
Yeah.
And he didn't, you know, he didn't understand that. He hadn't been exposed to that, you know, before. Nobody, you know, people had probably talked about it, but he hadn't really, like, experienced it and kind of, you know, put two and two together. And
well,
so
that elevation, until you really experience, like, really, really experience it, you just don't understand, like... You think, like, okay, I'll be out of breath or something like that.
Yep.
It's no, your whole body just does not want to function correctly. Yep. Like, it's wild.
And everybody's different. And then I've even seen that, like, even on given, you know, days or years, or, you know, depending on hydration, a bunch of stuff, like, it can affect you differently. Like, I've seen some of the toughest dudes, like, I've ever known literally be brought to their knees by altitude. Right. And so it's like, you're going to drive to 10.5, you're going to go run around, you're going to kill a bull, a 320 bull, you've never killed one, and you're going to haul it out of the mountains by yourself on your first elk hunt. I'm like, bro, like, why don't we have a discussion? Why don't we break this down, take this trip, make it into smaller chunks, and set you up for success? And then maybe in year three or four, you know, as you progress, all of a sudden these things are coming together and you've built a solid foundation. So,
And I get it. It's hard sometimes. Like, say you're coming from Pennsylvania or the East Coast, and you're thinking like, this is my only elk trip. You know, it's not like us driving to Idaho or something. You know, this is a severe investment. So it may be their only elk trip. And I get that. You want to make the most of it. You want to shoot that booner of a bull. But, okay, if this is the only elk trip you're going to do, maybe you need to find ways to mitigate that. Yep. Maybe you need to go on a guided trip. Maybe you need to figure some other things out, because the likelihood, if you've never done this before and you want to take this thing on, you have to be able to accept that the percentage is not great, not in your favor.
Or go for 2 weeks and not 7 days.
Exactly.
You know, something. I mean, hell, I may never go on another, go on another moose hunt, right? I didn't go into that thinking it's 60 inches or bust.
Like, yeah.
I may never get to go again. When I left Alaska, you know, I lived up there for many years. Like, when I walked away from Alaska, I just had to realize that I maybe would never go sheep hunting again. Like, that's just the reality, right? So was I going to pass up on an eight-year-old who gives a shit what he scores ram on my last year up there? Or was I going to take advantage of a nice legal ram because it might be the last of my life, you know? And so, like I said, to each his own, but I think that, you know, you want to talk about the industry, like we don't do a great job of, and it's not just the industry, but we don't do a great job of just metering, you know, the reality of what it is, that some of these things are. I mean, when I go back east, I don't get to whitetail hunt very much. Like, I'm not whole, like, everybody's different, but it's like, listen, the first, you know, five-year-old buck that walks by, like, and offers me a great opportunity, I'm probably going to take that opportunity, you know, because I understand how difficult it is. I understand that, you know, you pick 7 or 10 days on a calendar, it's not, you know, the most conducive to being successful whitetail hunting.
Well, that's one of the things I've noticed, and I've seen a lot more companies do it, especially this year, where, you know, it's really easy to glorify whether it's our, you know, I started to say R. I'm like, I don't have a pro staff. Actually, I do have one pro staff member. It's kind of a longstanding joke. My buddy Weston, he was the first guy to get a hat for free from me. And so he's my only official ever pro staff member. But
hey, at least you got one.
There we go. I think I doubt he still has it. He used to have it in his Instagram profile. it was our joke for the longest time. But, you know, it's, you know, whether it's promoting pro staff or this or that, or, you know, always the guys with the giant elk or whatever. And recently I've seen it happening a lot more where a company's Instagram, they'll share somebody's first doe. Mm-hmm. Or something, and you know, they'll share that picture and hype that up just as much as the giant muley buck that somebody shot, you know, up in the high country, whatever it is.
Right.
And I think if we start seeing people do that more often, companies, you know, a lot of these I've seen a lot of these aspirational individuals do that as well, where, you know, maybe a follower that they've had a connection with over a long time finally harvests something and they'll share it and hype them up. And it's like a teeny little spike or something. And I mean, shoot, everybody that's been watching knows my first mule deer, my only mule deer, is a teeny ass little velvet spike. Mm-hmm. My elk this year was a 4-point raghorn, and you know what? It's, I'm not sure if you saw it when we were on the Zoom call, but that's dead center behind my head on whenever I'm on video chat, because I'm proud as hell of that thing.
And you know what? And you should be. And that's the difference, is like, you know, the sliding scale. If I've lived in Wyoming my whole life and I've killed a bunch of mule deer since I was 12 years old, you know, and I've killed a 200-inch buck and I'm really proud of that, that same person is just as proud as that deer is the person that, you know, just killed their first, you know, basket rack whitetail back east on their family farm. Like they're the same thing. They can mean the same thing to those people, right? The other thing is, I think a lot of people discount the meat. Like, what I've realized going into, you know, the ninth inning of elk seasons on a few years, is that it's more important for me to have elk meat in my freezer than to have, you know, a big set of antlers on the wall, right? Mm-hmm. Like, That's what I'm doing it for. And I think people have to kind of figure that out for themselves. But man, I am as fired up for somebody who, I don't care what it is. If they're fired up, if it made them excited, they made a great shot. They put in the time, the effort, the work. They put in the dedication and they got it done. Good on them. Like, good on them. I don't pass that judgment. You know, I'm not, you know, you'll probably never see an animal on my Instagram page, because to me, that's not the point. Like, that's not what's important to me. What's important to me is, you know, proficiency in the mountains. So, you know, I like to kind of keep my successes and failures. I don't mind talking about the failures, but to myself, because to your point earlier, like, I don't want to have to get into this weird place where I like feel compelled to, you know, like somebody who's got a TV show, like at a certain point, I can only imagine the pressure they must be under to have to produce. And by producing, it means they have to kill something.
Yeah.
And then even more so, it's like, well, they have to kill just as big or not bigger. Like that's a spiral that you could go down and end up in some dark places, you know? So I just try to keep it pure, man. Just like I said, I literally try to go out there and, you know, I try to keep perspective. I literally try to go out there and think about the 12-year-old boy in Ohio when he got his first bear whitetail hunter bow, and how excited and jazzed I was. I still got the arrow right there, that autumn orange 2315 aluminum Easton arrow, right?
Love it.
Like, I'm like, if I can keep that perspective, I'll never have a bad day out in the field. If I kill something or not. And anyways, we're going down all kind of rabbit holes. Yeah. I just want to try to help people go out there and enjoy themselves and be safe in the process. And then whatever it is, however they define success, is kind of up to them, you know?
Yeah. So if folks wanted to find these videos, where can they check them out?
Jay Barklow. So Jay Barklow on Instagram is where I got my videos. And yeah, so that's kind of what I've been up to. I'm pretty excited. You know, it's good. I love teaching, and it's been, so as much as I've been selfish to not give the information, now that I've given the information, I realize I'm still somewhat selfish, because I'm getting probably as much, if not maybe more satisfaction out of it than maybe some of the people following along.
What's the saying? There are no truly selfless deeds, because even when we do something that's selfless, we feel a little bit good about ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's okay. I don't think that's a bad thing.
All right, so maybe you run into someone, you know, they know you're a hunter or whatever that happens to be, and they tell you, they're like, man, you know, I don't have any background or experience in this. I don't know anyone that does it, but I've always wanted to try hunting, or, you know, go get into the outdoors or whatever it may be. Like, it sounds so cool. Like, I really want to do this, but I don't know if I can. What general kind of advice or direction or words of wisdom would you give someone like that?
Well, I think you're better off trying to find somebody to talk to in person than try to, you know, get advice online. I'm not saying it's bad, but I just think you're better off trying to find somebody, either, you know, at a hunter education program is probably your first step anyways to go in hunting. You're going to have to take that program.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can meet some good people there. I also think that, you know, you can reach out to some people. Like I said, people in the hunting industry for the most part are pretty open and honest and just good human beings, and, you know, can maybe start you in the right direction. You just have to, you know, take it for what it is. Like, I think you should really want to go out there and enjoy nature and, like, get to experience things. That's the cool thing about hunting, is, like, mm-hmm. we get to see things because we're observing wildlife that most people in this world never even know go on. And I think that's the cool part. And it's like, yeah, I definitely want to fill tags, but I also have to know that it's this other part of the equation that's the bigger portion of it. Like, even if you kill one animal a year, like, what are you doing the other 99% of the time, right? And anyways, there's tons of information out there. But I think you have to take a hunter education class, trying to meet somebody in person, trying to connect with somebody locally that understands, you know, your animals and in your neck of the woods is definitely a good way to go. I mean, like I said, I struggled for a long, long, long time, and then just, you know, met a friend, met a mentor, somebody who would take me under the wing, show me a couple things, and then, you know, I'd get to go out and do it, experience it, fail, succeed, come back, reload, go again, and just look at it as a journey and not just like something that's like a, you know, quick thing you're going to achieve instant success, because probably not. Well, it depends how you define success, but...
Yeah, and I mean, that's a whole other rabbit hole we can go down. And I've talked about it a million times on there, and that's, I think, that is the key to enjoying this whole process, regardless. Yeah. Every year is defining that success appropriately. But I'm going to run one more thing by you, and it's just because it came up recently, and I'd like to address this on the podcast. And I had a buddy reach out to me, and, you know, a lot of the advice I get from people is like, reach out to someone. Everyone in the hunting industry, you know, wants to talk and wants to engage and this and that. And he has been having a lot of trouble with that. He's like, you know, man, I listen to the podcast and, you know, you guys always say like, reach out. Everyone wants to talk about hunting, this and that. And he's like, honestly, the experience I've had, I can't get info. And this is not a guy who's going out and being like, where do you hunt? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But he's having trouble like finding mentorship opportunities, people mm-hmm. to talk to, things like that. And, you know, initially my initial thought is kind of like, well, you just keep having to be persistent and keep expanding out and reaching out to people and sitting and dedicating the time to talking to them and getting to know them. But I was curious if you might have any additional insight on something like that. Somebody that is having trouble finding a mentor in the industry and has just kind of had a bad experience with people just not being interested.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is not everybody in the industry or on social media from the industry is doing it or looking to be a mentor. Like, let's just be honest, right? I mean, there's a lot of shameless self-promotion out there, and they're doing it to, you know, generate revenue, which is fine for the sake of their own ego. So let's just be clear about that. But with that said, there are a lot of people, and I don't want to mention any names because people are going to pile on, but there are a few people for sure that are friends of mine in the industry that are pretty selfless people that absolutely have time for you. The one thing I would say is you have to understand that, you know, I have a full-time job. These other folks have, a lot of us have full-time jobs.
These professional hunters are, I'm doing air quotes because you guys can't see this.
Yeah, but so here's what I ask people. If somebody reaches out and asks me a question, most of the time I will go back and say, I can't really honestly answer your question until you provide me some context. So think about the question you want to ask. Make sure it's specific and not too broad, and then provide some context. It's like, hey, I want to go to Colorado. I'm coming from back east. You know, I'm not in shape, or I am in shape, or I've never put a backpack on. Like, give me some context, or give these other people some context, so that we can probably, you know, that we can direct you in the right place and hopefully give you the best bit of advice we can. Like, the reality is I can't go out there and hunt with you, right? So I'm willing to help, but, you know, I think people appreciate when it shows you've done some background and legwork to get to the point where you're asking a question that you really want an answer to. Sometimes, and I don't get a lot of questions, but sometimes I think questions are directed more to get a response from me than to actually get
information.
But to actually get the information, you know? I unfortunately, we talked about, I don't know if we talked about it before we started, but, you know, the show's being canceled. But some of these consumer shows, like Western Hunter, is an excellent one. Like, if you had 3 days, no matter where you are in the country, and could fly out to Western Hunter, which, unfortunately, I'm sorry, it's not going on this year, but to go to Salt Lake and go to Western Hunter, you could walk around and literally talk and understand that we are normal people and talk to myself, Randy Newberg, Corey Jacobson, Aaron Snyder, like Brian Call, like everyone's there. And if you're not, like, you know, talking to somebody, like, I think everybody has time to speak. And I think if you get those opportunities, I would say don't squander it. by asking some random question, like actually have an agenda of what you're trying to elicit. Like if you want to know about backpack hunting, like Snyder would be a great guy to talk to. You know, if you want to know about a clothing system, like I'm probably a great guy to talk to. If you want to know about calling elk, like Corey or Jason, like those are great guys to talk to. And so, you know, it is going to take a little effort. But I also think that the more, I'll speak for myself, the more effort I see somebody putting in to trying to get the information and build a relationship, the more I'm willing to give back, if that makes any sense. Because we all have just a short amount of time.
Well, I think... Again, just reiterating what you said, give us, when you're asking people these questions, show that you've done as much research as
exactly.
you can,
yep.
that you've put in the effort, and give that context. Because, you know, if, like I said, if I, Corey and Jason, you know, say they're sitting there talking at the Phelps booth or something, and you come up and you're like, hey man, can you teach me how to call elk? There's a lot to deal with there. Versus you come up to them and be like, hey, you know, I've tried these Rocky Mountain calls. I've tried these Phelps calls. I'm struggling to figure out how to get the right fit. And then I, or like, maybe I've been doing this. I've been practicing, but I just can't get this sound quite right. That's like a quick, can often be like a quick 5 minute discussion versus like then, versus them having to sit and, and it's not that they don't want to take that time. It's a lot of the time they can't. And
you don't if there's have the time.
Hundreds of people coming up to ask them these same questions all the time.
Yeah.
Again, they're real people. And sometimes they want to hang out with their friends at the Hunt Expo too.
Yeah. I'll give you a perfect case in point. So this happens or has happened quite often, say at the shows, where somebody comes up and says, hey man, like, what Sika gear do I need? And I'm like, wow. Okay. So first question is, what are you doing? What are you hunting? Yeah. Like waterfowl, whitetail, big game. Okay. And then I start a series of questions to help narrow it down quickly. You know, what are you hunting? When are you hunting? How do you hunt? How long are you going to hunt? What weapon of choice do you use? And all of a sudden we can start narrowing that down. But if you come up and say, you know, hey, I'm going to go on my first elk hunt. I'm going to go to Colorado. It's going to be a muzzleloader hunt. It's going to be on horseback. And you start helping me, I can literally dial you in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, right? And the same with Corey. It's like, hey, Corey, like I go to an area in Idaho. They're call shy bulls. There's a little bit of hunting pressure. Like I had this one set up last year. And you start to paint this scenario, Corey is going to literally be able to narrow it down and give you that nugget of information that you are seeking, and you're going to get it right from the expert, right? And so that's what I mean. Like if you give a little context, if you help steer the question, then you can get that information. But, you know, if it's just some random question like, hey, what, you know, what bugle do I need? I'm like, have you ever bugled before? Like, do you hunt elk? Like, you know, I mean, there's so many factors that go into it. It's like, hey, what arrow do you shoot? And it's like, well, that's not the right question. The question is, you know, what arrow do you shoot out of your setup for elk? What pounds do you shoot on your bow? And what's on the front of that arrow on the broadhead side to kill the animal? It's like, okay, now all of a sudden I have context, or you have context for the answer I'm giving you. And when we're all short on time, you know, that just helps all of us. And that's what I'm trying to kind of do is, you know, if we can educate people better, then one, they're going to be able to make better buying decisions. They're going to be able to ask better questions, and they're going to get a better experience. But yeah, you're right. Like when you have a bunch of people lined up and I'll speak for myself, like I will literally stand there and that's what I'm saying. Everybody in the industry is smart or nice. All those guys I just mentioned, every one of them will stand there literally until they kick you out of the event hall to answer your questions. So the more efficient you can be with your time and our time, you know, either online or face to face, like I think the more engagement those people are going to see from the questions they're asking.
Well, and that, I mean, and I think that takes a little bit of self-awareness on your part. You have to understand what you're actually asking and your reasons for asking, because I think you nailed it earlier too. Some people just want an excuse to talk to you. Yeah. Like Corey Jacobs, like, shoot, I've been there when I first met him. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh. All right. Like, you feel like I've got to ask like a poignant question about elk calling if I'm going to talk to him. You can also just go say hi, be like, hey, dude, I really love following you. I love the films you put out.
Yeah, I love your Elk 101. Whatever it is. Yep.
But awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm glad we actually got to meet up
in person. This is crazy. I don't think this will be the last time we talk for sure. But,
Definitely not.
Yeah, but no, thanks for the invite. Appreciate it getting on and riffing. Sorry if I went down some rabbit holes, but
nope. Like I said, those are my favorite spots to be. So
cool.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. That'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this podcast inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. And head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.